This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Donald Trump made the TV talk show rounds this morning, not giving an inch on his call for a complete shutdown of all Muslims entering the United States. Here he is on CNN.
They want our buildings to come down. They want our cities to be crushed. They are living within our country, and many of them want to come from outside of our country. I am saying that until we figure this out, we should have a ban. It's very simple.
And over on MSNBC, Mika Brzezinski wanly noted the condemnation that's come from the Republican Party and presidential candidates. Well, here's how Trump responded to that.
They've been condemning
practically everything I say, and then they always come to my side. They were condemning the wall. They were condemning illegal immigration. They were condemning all of the things that I've been espousing, and now most of them are on my side. And the ones that aren't on my side are down to about zero in the polls, and they're not going to go anywhere.
And on and on it goes. But what if, at least on one point, Donald Trump is actually right? Not about banning Muslims, of course, but about marching forward fearlessly because no one in his party has really stood up and said, this must stop. I mean, the media calls it condemnation, but does a quick Jeb Bush tweet calling Trump unhinged or another one from Marco Rubio tweeting that he disagrees, is that really condemnation? Right now, Dick Cheney seems the standard bearer for tolerance when he says Trump's idea goes against everything we believe in. So maybe it's little wonder that Trump barrels forward without a worry in the world. Haven't we reached the time for something much, much stronger? For someone in the GOP to stand up and say with unassailable conviction, enough, Mr. Trump, shame on you. It has happened before. A Republican moment of clarity, courage, and conscience that rightly shamed politicians from both parties. And it happened in 1950 in a speech given on the Senate floor.
I speak as a Republican. I speak as a woman. I speak as a United States Senator. I speak as an American.
Margaret Chase Smith, Republican from Maine, was just a freshman senator in 1950. America was in the throes of anti-communist hysteria, and Smith had had enough. On June 1st, 1950, she delivered her Declaration of Conscience, a powerfully eloquent rebuke to her party's contributions to McCarthyism and the Red Scare. Now, there's no audio of her actual 1950 speech where she warned against the cancerous tentacles of know-nothing, suspect-everything attitudes. But we do have a recording she made later in 1970. It's a bit tough to understand, but I really encourage you to lean into the radio and listen closely, because Margaret Chase Smith's words ring so very true today.
As an American, I condemn a Republican fascist just as much as I condemn a Democratic communist.
As an American, she says, I condemn the Republican fascist just as much as I condemn a Democratic communist.
They are equally dangerous to our country. As an American, I want to see our nation recapture the strength and unity it once had when we fought the enemy instead of ourselves.
One of the reasons that she finally did decide to speak out is she was sort of shocked that no one could see through McCarthy and no one was standing up to speak out.
David Richards is the director of the Margaret Chase Smith Library in Skowhegan, Maine.
And she realized that she was a freshman senator, and she was of the belief that freshman senators were to be seen and not heard. So she really didn't think it was her place to do it. But in the end, she realized someone had to do it. And I think one of the interesting things in the speech is that she does refer to the fact that she's a woman, and maybe her special role is to be the conscience of the United States Senate as the only woman in the United States Senate.
Yes, she points out she's a woman and wonders
right.
How the mothers of the accused in the anti-communist hysteria were mm-hmm. feeling. So did Margaret Chase Smith herself know anyone who had been swept up in McCarthyism?
Well, in a sense, some of the tactics had been used against her, because when she ran for the Senate in 1948, some of the criticisms of her were printed up on pink pieces of paper, which is a tactic that the McCarthyites used to insinuate that you were a pinko. You weren't a full-fledged red communist, but you were a pinko. And so she was very sensitive to those sorts of things. She also had accusations made against her later on. This whole issue of guilt by association. She had gone to a United Nations meeting over in Europe with a woman who was accused of being a communist. And so people were saying, well, why did you go with her?
Well, let's play another clip from Margaret Trace Smith, again, reading in 1970 a version of her 1950 speech, because she speaks so strongly about her desire that, yes, she believes that the Republican Party needs to win the next election, but she does not want the party to do it in the manner that McCarthy would have them do it. So let's listen.
The nation solely needs a Republican victory. But I don't believe, I won't see the Republican Party ride to political victory on the four horsemen of tyranny, fear, ignorance, bigotry, and sneer.
She says, I do not want to see the Republican Party ride to political victory on the four horsemen of calumny, fear, ignorance, bigotry, and smear. Why was it important for her to give this rebuke to her party specifically?
Well, although she never refers to McCarthy, it's very clear who she's speaking out against. Really, one of the big things for her is this whole idea of conscience, that as a politician, it's not about being popular, it's about doing the right thing. And actually, if you look through the speech, she's critical of both Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in fact, in number two of her 5 points of her Declaration of Conscience, she speaks very clearly. She says, the Democratic administration of Harry Truman has initially created the confusion by its lack of effective leadership, mm-hmm. by its contradictory grave warnings and optimistic assurances, by its complacency to the threat of communism here at home, and by its oversensitiveness to rightful criticism. I mean, I see that and I think, you know what? Many people would offer that same critique to President Obama today.
Mm-hmm. And I know in the past couple of days, some people a little more forcefully have said that exact same thing. And I think part of what she's saying is that Republicans don't need to take the low road. You know, they can take the high road and defeat the Democrats for these reasons that she cited.
You know, she also says, though, as a Republican, she is speaking directly to her colleagues, because she says that the Republican Party faces a challenge today that is not unlike the challenge which it faced back in Lincoln's day. That it had a choice in terms of what kind of party it wanted to be.
I cannot believe the American people will uphold any political party that puts political exploitation above national interest. While it might be a fleeting victory for the Republican Party, it would be a more lasting defeat for the American people.
A more lasting defeat for the American people. What kind of impact did her speech have?
The next day, across the country, newspapers ran reaction to her speech as banner headlines. 11 days later, she's on the cover of Newsweek magazine, and the caption below it is Margaret Chase Smith, a woman for vice president, with a question mark after it. So personally, it put her on the national stage, but it also really caught the attention of the national media that finally someone had gotten up and spoken out against Joe McCarthy. She did have a few supporters who signed on to the speech, but by and large, most of her colleagues still remained silent.
And it took time, though, for McCarthyism to peter itself out.
Yeah, she got undermined in that about 3 weeks after she makes the speech, North Korea invades South Korea. So that re-inflames Americans' concerns about the spread of communism, and it makes McCarthy look like he's on the right track. It's really not going to be until 1954, 4 years later, that McCarthy starts to falter.
Hmm. You know, in reading over her speech today in 2015 and listening to her read her words, I am so stunned and taken by how you just need to change some of the proper names. And it feels like it could be applied in our world, in our time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as a final little clip here, I would like to play the last part of Margaret Chase Smith's Declaration of Conscience.
It is high time that we all stopped being tools and victims of totalitarian techniques. Techniques that, if continue here unchecked, will surely end what we have come to cherish as the American way of life.
So there's Margaret Chase Smith giving a clear and impassioned warning against totalitarianism techniques right here in the United States. I mean, she died in 1995. David, what do you think she would make of this moment America finds itself in today?
Well, that's a very interesting question. One of the things that we try not to do is play the "what would Margaret think" game. You have her speech, you have her words, and let people decide for themselves what they think. I think the point I would more make is it does come down to conscience. This is a plea for conscience, and that's not for just one single voice. It's, you know, she appeals to the American people. You know, what do you think about this?
Well, David Richards is director of the Margaret Chase Smith Museum in Maine. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And by the way, I really encourage the American people listening to this to read the full transcript of Margaret Chase Smith's Declaration of Conscience. We have a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.